Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the World of Ink Network, founded in 2011 by Virginia Grenier and Marcia Cook. Their vision was to start a radio show that helped writers reach their dreams. The World of Ink has a wonderful group of hosts who are dedicated to delivering shows to entertain and inspire listeners. The World of Ink Network shares resources that introduce tips, products, and services to help strengthen, support, and challenge those who love writing and the written word. Their hope is to bring not only authors, illustrators, and publishers together, but screenwriters, directors, and producers. New to the network will be a variety of special shows, bringing not only entertaining shows, but informative discussions on timely subjects. To learn more about us, go to www.worldofinknetwork.com or visit us on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Thank you for your support and enjoy the show.
So welcome everyone to Into the Abyss again. This is Elizabeth Black. I'm your host. My co-host is Marcia Casper Cook, and I'd like to introduce myself first. Sephora Giron, and she's going to talk about her books and metaphysics and tarot and all kinds of cool stuff. So let me introduce myself first. I'm Elizabeth Black. I write erotica, romance, horror, dark fiction. And I have two books out right now. One of them is called New Restraint, which you can get through Amazon, and that's an erotic romance. And the other one is called Roughing It, which is also an erotic romance, but it's started out as X-Files fan fiction. And it's a bit of a medical thriller, and that one's a little off the beaten track, so that could be a lot of fun for people, and it's also available at Amazon. So I'm going to turn the mic over to Marcia and have her introduce herself, and then Sephora can introduce herself. Go ahead, Marcia.
Hi, I'm Marcia Cook, and I am the World of Ink Network, along with Virginia Grenier. We started it about seven years, I think, now. And I am an author, screenwriter, and radio show host, and I was a literary agent, but I don't do that much anymore. And I just have to add something about the World of Ink. I think, I wanted to let you know that the website, our website, which is www.worldofinknetwork.com, we had Virginia takes care of that, and there's a problem with the one thing that in case people see that we charge for our shows, we do not. So if people pay anything, it would be to Virginia for services. You know, she does a lot of editing. She does different types of services. I do not. So, and my shows, nobody pays for the shows. And it had been brought to my attention when Virginia changed the website that people thought that. But I've been doing shows for 6 or 7 years, and we do not charge for that. So I just wanted people to know that off the bat. And we have several different hosts on our shows, but we'll have a show today. I'm not going to, we have Willow and we have Cassandra Dane, who used to do shows. I don't know, it's such a different market now, which we'll probably get into. And we're very glad that Elizabeth Black joined us, and she does great shows. And that's a little bit about what's going on. And some of the show, we're not having as many shows as we usually do because of the Christmas season. And then in January, we'll be restarting up with our weekly shows. But I will be popping on doing different shows because, as we know, that I sometimes decide a show last minute, so which is fine. And I'm not sure my day yet because I changed my day, but I may change it back. So I'll be posting when I will have the shows. And so that's about enough about me. Okay.
All right. I have another announcement myself.
Oh, okay, good.
Real quickly, I have an announcement myself. Our other guest today, Cal Ori, she's unable to make it because she's having phone problems. So I'm going to have her on in probably early January or February. So I'm going to be talking to her about when she can come on the show itself. Okay, thank you.
Okay, good. Okay, Sephora.
Hi, I'm Sephora Giron, and I'm chiming in from Toronto, Canada. I'm a horror writer, a tarot reader, a paranormal investigator. I have a couple books out right now with Sam Hain, which will, I guess, not be out with Sam Hain much longer because all rights revert at the end of the month. And I guess we'll talk about some of that stuff. And,
they're gone now. So they're leaving too, Sam Hain.
Yeah.
Well, Sam Hain Horror is shutting down. The Sam Hain Romance will continue to thrive. So I've actually already resold. The books will be coming out under Riverdale Avenue Press in the new year.
Those books.
And I had actually just today a new anthology. I have a story in a new anthology that just came out today from the Great Lakes Horror Podcast, which I'm one of the founding members. It's a podcast like the one we're talking on now. And we just released our first anthology with a pile of writers from the Horror Writers Association Ontario chapter, which I run. I run monthly meetings, and we do all kinds of cool stuff. And this is one of the new cool things we're doing. Andrew Robertson was our compiler, editor, person who created this book. And so that came out today. And then I'm also in another book. Maybe we'll talk a bit about how authors have to re-strategize how they get their shit out there, because now I'm also in another anthology, which has also been created in a different way, with six authors coming together with novellas. That's Megan Hart, Rob Boley, Carrie Lipp, Chris Mars, Brad Hodson, and myself. We all wrote a novella about Ouija boards, and we all stuck them together in one big book, which will be out on Friday the 13th in January. And I have over 20 novels somewhere.
I love that Friday the 13th. Oh, my God. Friday the 13th. Okay, maybe as long as you're on the show, Elizabeth, let me ask one question. Okay, this has been going on for years. And when I was probably really young, Friday the 13th, I do not know why, but I make a little penny bracelet. And I have no clue why I started it, but I won't stop it. I use scotch tape and pennies. And I put it around my wrist, and I always wear it February 13th. I mean, have you ever heard? I mean, I don't know where I got it, but wherever I got it from, I've been doing it forever and ever. I don't know how that happened.
That's cool. So you made your own little penny ritual for February, Friday the 13th? Why February?
Well, it's not February, but it's Friday the 13th. I mean, it's any Friday the 13th.
Oh, any Friday the 13th.
Any Friday
like
the 13th.
Just like here in Canada, there's a biker club that always – every Friday the 13th, they go bike ride, like the Hell's Angels or whatever. I think it's Hell's Angels. They all go for a ride from Colburn to somewhere else. Yeah, it's like there's a big biker deal every Friday
cool.
the 13th. There's like thousands of them. Yeah, it's a big picnic if it's nice or, I guess, snowy and igloo-y if it's not.
Sometimes
you start a ritual.
Because
if you start a ritual, sometimes you don't know that you don't want to stop it, especially if you're superstitious.
Oh, for sure. If you're superstitious, making something superstitious on Friday the 13th, you'll never stop because then you'll go nuts
That's
if
exactly,
anything bad
that's
happens.
Uh-huh.
I figure pennies have a lot of significance. Actually, one of my books for Sam Hain is called A Penny Saved, because here in Canada, we don't have pennies anymore. We haven't had pennies for years. So if you find a penny on the ground in if you find a penny on the ground in Canada, it's very unique now. So I wrote a story about this woman who keeps finding pennies, and it's because a demon, you know, it's like breadcrumbs with Hansel and Gretel. It's a demon luring her, but she's become obsessed with collecting these damn pennies, and she has jars and jars of them, and she shoves them in her skin and all this crap, because, you know, it's suffered your own right in the story. And it goes down a whole erotic angle, too. She gets fucked in hell and all that. But anyway, but the thing is...
Okay, I can't say that I've done all that.
But the thing is, the penny is a very superstitious thing, right?
I know.
So,
I must,
copper, you know, you have the copper bracelets for healing.
For healing.
Right? So maybe
for healing.
Somehow in the back of your mind, you were thinking of the copper for healing. Like you didn't, some unconscious reptilian thing you had because you were young when you started, right? So you didn't.
Very young. I don't remember. Really.
Young.
Yeah.
Found a bunch of pennies and taped them together. It looked cool. And somehow it became a... addiction or a fetish, right?
Everybody has them. So you write about that.
Yeah, and then another thing with pennies that people may not know that's also a metaphysical thing that I learned in one of my tarot classes is that, you know how you'll find a penny on the floor in your apartment or house or whatever. They say that that's a dead person trying to talk to you, like your grandma or someone, right?
Is that true? You think that?
Wow. You know what happened to me last night? And this is a really silly story.
No, it's not silly, but this is what we want to hear. We like to hear these stories. This is interesting.
Yes. It's a penny story. Anyway, so last night I was, I collect these friggin' Kylo Ren dolls. I have a fetish for Kylo Ren. And but I had all these little swords in my voodoo box because they all fall, I just have the dolls around my desk, but they don't carry their swords because they're all going to get broken when they fall over. So I had all these little swords, but one of my dolls, I wanted his sword because I wanted to play with him, and I couldn't find it, and it wasn't in all the collection of swords around in the box, and I pulled all the swords out. And then so I was looking all over the floor. Maybe a sword fell on the floor, because I'm a pig. And then I'm looking on the floor, can't find the sword. It's very clear under my desk. And I was like, God damn it, where's that little sword? Because I couldn't put any of the other swords into this doll. It's just the one type of, anyways. So then I look down again by my foot, and there's a penny there. And I'm like, that penny wasn't there a minute ago because I've been crawling on the floor looking for the sword. And then right beside the penny was the sword.
Wow.
By my foot.
See, isn't it?
Oh, that's weird.
I was
like, this
thanks,
is, Grandma.
My grandmother was very superstitious, but I was at a shopping center. And I probably shouldn't even say this, but I will. Okay, as long as we're talking about it. Okay, and I was at a shopping center, and they have big posts, okay, and in the post, they're like, it's cut out. It's like kind of, it's been there for years. It's like not marble. It's like granite or whatever. So I'm standing there waiting for my husband to pick me up, and in the middle there's an opening, and there was a penny. So I couldn't help myself because it was a shiny penny, so I took it. And I put it in my purse, but I also gave another penny because I didn't want to, I thought to myself, I don't want to steal this. It's a penny, but it's somebody, who knows? I don't know. I put another one back. I have no idea why someone would put a penny there, let alone why I even took it. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah.
I have no clue why somebody would put a penny in the middle of something like that. It was weird. So
maybe
you think somebody's trying
to
talk to me? Wow. You think somebody's trying to talk to me?
Sometimes when I stop to pick up a penny, I'll say, because I know people will see me. I'm like, no, it's an angel. I have to pick it up. If I don't pick it up,
is that what you think it is? Is that what you think it is? Yeah. I have to. I know. See, that's the thing. If it's a penny, and I like shiny pennies. So I had to pick it up. I had to take it out.
Yeah,
that's really weird.
This is kind of funny. Well, when I was a kid, my best friend used to get on my case all the time because I was always finding money. I'd be on my way to her house and I'd find a dollar bill. And then I'm on my way back home and I'd find a quarter and a bunch of pennies. But this happened every time I went over to her house. And she's like, she would come to my house and she wouldn't find anything. So, I still pick up pennies. I figure, 99 more and I have a dollar. And my husband says that I'm wasting my time picking up pennies. I'm like, no.
So you are superstitious then? Because otherwise it just becomes something you do.
I do it anyway. I'm kind of like the superstitions with me work the opposite way because I'm born on the 14th. And if my birthday falls on a Saturday, there are two Friday the 13ths in a row. And I've always had extremely good luck on Friday the 13th. I don't know why.
Wow.
It just, it happens. Yeah. Okay. I mean, like the first horror movie that I saw when I wasn't scared to watch one was Friday the 13th. And I was wondering, what on earth was I so afraid of? This movie is stupid. I had black cats. I've never had a problem with black cats. I walk under ladders when I did stage work. Never had anything fall on me. So, the complete opposite of what's supposed to happen is what happens to me.
See, that isn't it?
So that's,
might have
that's bizarre.
To do with your sign, too, like your chart, which I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
I take hours to do it. But, another thing, while you were saying that you randomly always find money at your friend's place. I have a friend, and she's come to me for tarot readings a couple times, and she's a horror writer, too, and she's a Sagittarius. And one time she came to, about 10 years ago, she came to me for a reading, she said, we're talking about picking the pennies and stuff. She goes, I always pick up money. She said, I'm always finding money all the time. And then she said, I have this special pocket in my purse that I put all the money I find in it. And she dumps out like $50 worth of coins. I have this week. And I'm like, holy shit. She goes, no. She said, once you start looking, you always find it. And she said, but if you're walking by the money, you'll never see it. And because at that point, because she was trying to help me manifest money better. Actually, it was only about 6 years ago, so it was after my divorce. And And I, at that point, I would sometimes pick up money and sometimes not, because I didn't want to look, you know, like a poor person picking up money or whatever, right? And then but I always pick up pennies, always. And so then I got more, and then, yeah, then I started finding toonies and loonies, which are our $1 and $2 bills. And, yeah, and I started finding bigger things to pick up.
You just looked down and found it, you mean? Is that just like that?
Yeah. Yeah, like wow. You just start being more aware. I guess as a writer, too,
yeah,
you should always
that's
be
a
aware.
Lot of it. You need to be more aware of what's going on around you, because then you notice it. But so I don't read them anymore, but I used to read tarot cards. And one way that I would read them was, I have a problem, I would read for myself, and it's like I already knew the answer. I just needed to have something show it to me. And then I could figure out what I needed to do, and then the problem was solved. And I noticed that if I keep my mind open, all kinds of opportunities are out there, and you find them that way. But otherwise, if you're closed off to it, there could be an opportunity sitting right in front of your face, and you won't even notice it. You just have to be
to be
open to all
the
opportunities.
Yeah.
I would say about 80% of people who come to me for tarot readings, especially now that I'm doing them on Fiverr, so they're really quick little $5 things, they're really just checking their own intuition, like, or their own choice. It's like, oh, I just needed reassurance. I was on, you know, they already knew what they're doing.
So where do people find you? So in case somebody's listening, where do they find you? On Fiverr for that? Really?
Yeah, I'm on Fiverr, and I'm also have Tarot Paths, T-A-R... tarotpaths.blogspot.ca. But yeah, I'm on Fiverr, just under Stafford Jerome. I'm always under my own name, because my name's bizarre enough. I don't need to like have something fancy like Pretty Witch or whatever. But you know, and I have Tarot Paths only because I was keeping it different. But if you just go to StaffordJerome.ca, you can figure it out.
You can find do a lot of people come for readings?
On Fiverr, I'm still new at it. I've only been doing it for less than a year, and it seems to be picking up more. I definitely have repeat clients. So once people find me and they realize how fucking cheap it is, I charge $100 an hour in real life. So you know what? You get the same reading for $5, whatever. It's not the same reading, it's shorter, but I do video readings, written readings, and all that.
Well, what kind of information do you ask them?
What
do you ask them? I mean, from online. I mean, it's hard, though, right, to do it online?
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I offer through video. Most people don't really have a question. They'll give me a birth date. Sometimes they don't give me anything. And you'll see in all the comments, most people I don't even know, and even the ones I know, I never know it's them because they have some stupid email address, and I don't check anyone. I never look at pictures and stuff because it just confuses me. So I'll just get the, what's my year? You know, what's going to happen to me this week is usually how it is, because they come back, right? And then so I'll just pull a bunch of cards, and I turn on my little camera video, I prattle on to the video and then post it, and that's it.
Wow.
And some people are very specific, like, you know, am I getting, you know, this specific amount of money by this specific amount of time because blah, 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 and then I can tell them that too.
Wow.
So how did you get started reading tarot cards as opposed to, say, runes or astrology? What is it about tarot that appeals to you the most?
Let's see. I'm going to try to make it short. The concise answer.
We have time. There's no rush.
Oh, I could talk for days. You know that. Elizabeth knows that. I always was interested in astrology as a kid, a little kid. And I was always reading astrology books, like, from as a seriously little kid and on. And I always liked horror. And when I was 14 was when Stephen King kind of came out. That's when Carrie was published, was when I was 14, like in the 70s, right? And so I got more into horror. But I was always afraid of the actual tarot cards. And it was because of movies, which I hadn't seen many because I had a very sheltered life. So the odd movie I would see would really freak me out because I wasn't used to the, as kids are these days, the constant barrage of violence and blood. Like,
it would
creep me out badly if I saw a movie. And you guys are probably the same with that. And so... then my first husband actually gave me a pack of those Gypsy Witch tarot cards for Christmas one year, and when I was in my 20s, and I wouldn't even touch them. I was afraid of them. I was always afraid of tarot cards. And then then he left me when I was about 33 when he left me with the two kids. And I started thinking, shit, man, I got to, like, figure out an income because I'm a writer, but, you know, I need another income or I don't need to, you know, leave the house, you know, because babysitting is expensive, right? So then I started.
Babysitting is very expensive, right? Yeah, it's really expensive these days.
I had two kids. And so then down the street in where I lived, there was, like, one of those little funky crystal shops or whatever. It was back in the 80s. And so back then, tarot cards weren't above ground yet. They were just starting to kind of come above ground, but you still couldn't buy them at Chapters or Kohl's or anything, like the bookstores. Those are our bookstores here. You still couldn't find them. You had to go to the special witch shops and all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still afraid, but I went, now I have to drag Nancy Kilpatrick into this. So Nancy Kilpatrick, the horror writer, she still lived in Toronto back then, and around the time my husband left, she took me to see Annie Sprinkles, because Annie Sprinkles was in town. There was some big sex fetish vending fucking thing. I don't know what was happening, but it was like this fair. To this day, we talk about it. We still don't know what that function was supposed to be. But at any rate, in one corner of this crazy place, the Annie Sprinkles was reading tarot for people. So Nancy pushed me and made me get my tarot cards read, and I still remember, I got, like, the Tower and the Devil and some other stuff, and it's because I was going through a very traumatic divorce, because it was out of blue. I had no idea who was going to leave me. And so that didn't make the tarot idea any happier to me, because I got all these shitty cards. Oh, you're going through changes. I mean, she was very nice, and I didn't remember what she said. So then Nancy said, no, tarot's not scary. It's not. I'll take you back to my place. I'll do a tarot reading for you. You'll see. It's okay. And so she takes me back to her place, and I pull the fucking Devil and the Tower and something else I don't remember. But I remember those two. And I'm like, no. So she realized that wasn't the best idea. But it also was the very first time I saw how you can randomly pick cards and pick the same ones that day, which is why I always tell my clients, don't come back and see me in a week. You give at least a month between readings for the same questions.
Hmm.
And so then after that, I went I this little crystal shop in the area, and then they had a sign up, and they were doing these James P. Wells, and he's actually on Facebook now. He's a Toronto tarot reader and does all sorts of great shit. He was running this little course on, forms of divination. I don't remember what he called it. But so 1 week you'd learn how to read crystal balls. The next you'd learn about crystals. The next you'd learn about pendulums. You'd learn about all this, you know, scrying in a mirror, scrying in the water, and reading each other's minds. And we learned all these things. And 1 week was tarot cards. And the way he presented tarot cards was really nice.
Can I just ask a question? Because I've always been afraid of tarot cards, but the thing is, though, they are changed. Haven't they changed? I mean, somebody said, you know, because I think Willow had lots of shows with, you know, reading tarot cards. But haven't they changed somewhat? Because they used to be a lot more scary, I think, to people. Yeah. Are they the same, or are they easier on the eye?
The same. What's the tool?
They are? Okay,
all right. Because
I thought that they weren't sometimes, because I know, because I myself was afraid of tarot cards. I just didn't like.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, it's a scary thing. There's somebody on the line, and I don't know if they might want to talk to you. So if they're on the line, I'm just going to tell them, though, that if they don't want to talk, they don't have to. So let me just put them on for a second. Somebody may have a question for you. Hi, would you like to speak on the air? If not, you don't say anything. If you want to, let me know.
Hi, Marcia.
Mary?
Mary Rita. Yeah.
Oh, did you want you want to ask a question? How are you?
I didn't realize your show was going on, and then I saw it and I wanted to listen for a little bit.
Okay. So then
I might want to ask a question, though. It's a good topic.
All right. So I'm going to put you on hold for a few minutes. If you want to stay on the line, and then I'll put you back on, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Or you can text me if you want to ask a question.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you.
If you think you want to. Okay. Okay. All right, yeah, if she wants to, then she can ask you a question. Is that okay? Or?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'll just finish up quickly how I got my training. So James T. Wells, he also was really creepy. I just wanted to do a little side thing with one of the classes he did with us because it was trippy. And I may have told Elizabeth the story before when we were at the Stanley, but we all had to go off in pairs, and it was a very small class, like 14 people or something. And then you had to write the name of a dead person on a piece of paper, and he put them all literally into a hat. And then everybody would pick a piece of paper, and you'd partner off, and then, not partner off, but everybody pick a piece of paper, and you try and guess shit about whatever that, you know, that date or whatever. And then so, I know it was a name, that's right, because I think I put my grandmother's name. Anyway, so I put my grandmother's name in the hat, because she had just died a few years before. And the teacher, James, picked my grandmother out of the hat. And so, you know, I was lucky I got the teacher to do me. God help the person I got. I didn't know what the hell was going on. Anyway, so he said all this stuff about my grandmother, and I was writing it down. I wrote it all down. So none of it made sense to me. You know, he was talking about dogs and curtains and tables and cars and all this shit. So then I went home and phoned my mom. And, oh, yeah, and also what he said, which tripped me out, was, oh, your grandmother's here right now. She's looking over you, and she's going to help you through this divorce, and she's going to help you get your writing career. Because I was just starting my writing career. I didn't have my first leisure book yet. And then so she's going to help you with your career, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay. but, yeah, then I phoned my mom when I got home, and I just told, you know, and everything I said to her, she acknowledged, like, she had a story about it. Oh, yeah, that was our dog Peanuts, and he did this, and blah, blah, blah. Oh, no.
Oh, so she knew, so she was familiar with the image. She was familiar with the imagery.
She was familiar with everything that
the
reader said.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, so the reader was doing her childhood. So it was her childhood home, my mother's childhood home, my mother's childhood pet, my mother's car, my mother's curtains, like, from her childhood home. Which was, you know, my mom didn't have Alzheimer's yet, so it was true. Totally tripped me out. It totally tripped me out. And, yeah, and then that night after I talked to my mom, and I'm sitting in bed, and, you know, the kids are at their dad's that weekend, so I'm home alone and, you know, a little freaked out. And then all of a sudden there's, like, knocking above my head on my bedroom wall, and I had no – the way the houses were, like, there was no wall again, like, there was no neighbor to knock on the wall. Like, it totally tripped me out. So I said, okay, Grammy, if you're here, do not materialize, because I will have a heart attack and die on the spot. And I think that will be counterproductive to what you're trying to do here. So do not tap, do not materialize, just leave me the hell alone. And
did
then I went on
happen?
To do,
did something
I
happen?
Pardon?
Did something happen? That you knew she was there?
Well, the knocking above my head. It knocked
the knocking.
Okay. Time. Tap, tap, tap.
Wow.
And I was like, holy fuck, no. And the animals were looking. It wasn't. And then another time after another class, I had three cats and a dog, and they all, like, were on the bed. And you know how animals look at something that isn't there. They were all looking
well,
at
that's
something
what they,
that wasn't
they,
there.
Well, that is what they say, though, right? I mean, that animals can sense these things before...
Oh, yeah.
Humans?
So, yeah. So they were all looking above my head where I'd heard that knocking before, the cats and the dog, all staring. And then they're all doing the, like, something circling. All of them, their necks are going. I'm looking for a fly or a fruit fly or something, or a light or a sound or something, and there's nothing going on. And then they all shot down the stairs at the same time.
Wow.
Like, as if they're following.
Oh.
Wow.
I'm like, ah.
can I ask you a question?
Know
you know, you keep saying
was.
you mentioning your grandmother a lot. You know, I mean, we had this talk a while ago. I don't know if it was on the show but about, you know, sometimes people, like I myself, like in some of my children's books, I add my grandmother in it, and you know, she's a very strong image. She lived to like 101, so I mean, but it's a very strong personality person in my life that, you know, because I find myself quoting, you know, or thinking a lot of the way she did. So do you feel, you must be feeling that too from your grandmother, because it seems like you've mentioned that several times already.
But what was strange to me when he brought up my grandmother was that I'd never been close to her. Like, my other cousins were the favorites. I was not the favorite. I was brown hair, black haired, and, you know, brown or black, whatever color it was. And all my the other three girl cousins were blonde, and then there were four boy cousins. There was eight of us all together, and I was not the favorite. I know which one the favorite was, so I don't want to say the name on the air. But I was not the favorite. And then to have several, not just that, not James, but other people tell me she's around me. But then again, it makes sense to me because she's a Leo, and I've always had an affinity with Leo personalities, very strong personality. My parents have always said, oh, you're just like your grandmother. And they don't mean it nicely.
Well, I'm a Leo. I'm a Leo,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, no, I love Leos. I actually planned for my firstborn child to be a Leo. And, boy, be careful what you wish for. I got him.
No, my best friend is a Leo. Yeah, my best friend is a Leo.
Oh, but what was cool about her, and I guess maybe this is the affinity, was my mom used to tell me that she was my grandmother was a huge reader, and she was from Finland, and then they came over, right? And not my mom, but my grandmother, they came over, and then she married and had children. But my grandmother was a huge reader, and women weren't allowed to read in her day, so she'd go down by the river, and she'd hide her books under the rocks, because she was such a voracious reader. And then as she was older, she was trying to be a writer, but I think because she was so failed and, you know, depressed, her husband was died in a horrific accident the year before I was born and all this stuff, you know, and it's different times. And so she never really, she had a couple things published, like poems and stuff, but not, you know, we always wondered if she died, if we'd find, like, all these manuscripts somewhere, but apparently there weren't any. But, yeah, I hadn't even seen her. You know, I hardly ever saw her. She lived in Maine. I lived in, you know, London or Toronto, depending where I was. And, yeah, so it's strange to me that she's my guardian angel, but she is, because I do feel her. And as I get more into this stuff, because it's been 20 years now, she is here. She's here right now. I can feel her. And it's very strange to me. But
how do people know when, you know, there might be people listening or going to listen to this on the archive? How do they know that somebody? I mean, a lot of times people say, "Oh, I feel that somebody's around me." What would they be feeling like? You know, I mean, what people
different.
How they could tell.
I never believed in it till that knocking happened that night after that class, and I was in my 30s by then.
Yeah.
And I don't always believe their stuff, but when I go to the Lizzie Borden house, I feel things, and at the Stanley Hotel, I felt things, and a couple of other places reportedly haunted. Can't wait to go to the Queen Mary for Stoker Con to see what the hell happens there when we're all trapped on that boat. But it's, for me, everyone's different. So I used to work with a partner, and she could really actually see things. Or if you ask Rain Graves, she can actually see shit. I don't see it, but I think it's because I said a long time ago, I don't want to see it because I'll have a heart attack and die. So, but I feel like...
So do you feel you stifle yourself by not wanting to reach further?
Oh, yeah, and that's what my teacher said when I had my very first class. He says, you're blocking yourself so badly, you're way more intuitive probably than anyone here.
You just don't want to let it in.
And I probably am, and I probably could read minds, and I probably could do a lot of things, but I'm too terrified, and I don't think I want to read people's minds, actually.
Exactly.
Because especially after all this election, I really don't want to read people's minds. I don't want to read all that stuff.
I know you're a paranormal investigator, so how does that play into, like, I mean, have you tried to contact your grandmother in a more physical fashion, like a seance or something like that? Or, I mean, you've been to the Lizzie Borden house, you know, we went to the Stanley Hotel. How does the paranormal investigator aspect of it fit in with all of this?
Well, I've never tried to contact my grandmother because she just comes when she wants to, I guess. And I don't know what I'd say to her. And that's part of what... troubling, and as you probably know, when you're paranormal investigating, is you sort of need to have a reason why you're there. Like when we'd go down to California to the mansion there, we'd ask the ghost questions because we went twice, and so we got a sense of the history and who we may or may not be talking to, and they'd say, so, was that you in the pool? Or, you know, for me, I'm just curious about if there's an afterlife, and I use K2 meters, which is, I guess for people who don't know what that is, it's measures the electron. It's a handheld device that measures electronic energy, and like electricians use them for doing your electrician thing. And theoretically, you can use them for ghost hunting because ghosts are energy. And so if a ghost is nearby, this thing may flash. And then I use recorder, like, what do you call it? I would say tape recorders, but they don't exist anymore. But, you know, the
like
digital
EVP recordings, that sort of thing? EVP that sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, so I have recordings from various places, but I only got good at kind of listening to them a couple years ago. And I listened to one from the Haunted Mansion, which is down in California, and one of our friends got possessed, and you can read about it in the Haunted Mansion Project Part 2 on Amazon. And he got dragged under the bed while I was reading a tarot. Oh, my God, it was such a crazy thing. But it started off normal. His name's Dan, and it was our second time at the Haunted Mansion in California where Rain Graves organized that retreat, and a bunch of writers would go there. And so he said, oh, Seth, can I have a tarot reading? Some crazy shit's been happening. So I turned on the little recorder, and then I read tarot for him, and he had had an issue with, from the last time he was at the house, he felt like he had dragged something home with him. And then he was telling me some stories about some strange things that had happened during that year since we saw each other. And then as he's talking, his voice was changing. And I thought, oh, he's a comedian, haha, you know. And then this guy, Dan, he's like 8 feet tall. Like, he's fucking huge. I don't know how tall he is. He's probably like 6'3" or something, but I'm a midget, so, you know, everyone's tall to me. So he starts getting dragged under the bed. And I'm like, what's going on? Like, he was sitting on the bed, and then suddenly he's under the bed. And I'm like, what's happening, you know? Like, and he's like, Seth, help me, you know. And so he was being dragged under, and you could feel, like, the room had changed. And then I went screaming for Rainey, because Rainey had just become a high priestess. So you can hear me on recording. So, we need a high priestess. I'm running down the stairs looking for her, running through the house. Rainey, get back here.
See, Willow Cross, you know Willow Cross, she did shows about paranormal and investigations. And I was actually on the phone sometimes when she was doing the investigation. It was really very exciting. You know, where she could feel things, and the electrodes were, you know, flashing on and off.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in a, it was a, someplace, it was a nursing facility, and it was closed, you know, and it was really weird. But, you know, but I think there are a lot of people that do this regularly, right? I mean, you know, this is their, what they do. And so your kids, how do they feel? I mean, you mentioned you have kids. So how do they feel about the things you talk about? Or do you not talk about it with them? Or?
Well, they've grown up with their freak-ass mother. And, you know, because I did choose tarot reading as a part-time job, the younger one, Dorian, who's now, you know, the dancer I'm always posting on Facebook, he had to come with me a lot because I would, you know, friends would let me read out of coffee shops and stuff like that on Saturdays. And so the weeks I had Dorian, I'd bring him with me, or he'd get dropped off there when his dad was done. And so he was always part of it, and so was Adrian, my oldest son. They've always been, you know, I'd practice on them. I taught them, too, how to read the cards. They both can read cards fantastic. And, I think they think I'm weird, but, you know, like Adrian's 29 and Dorian's 25. So, yeah, it's just kind of their life. But I've never indoctrinated them into, like, you have to read tarot. Like, you know, they have their little crystals. They might water their magic plants or not. They'll go through phases where they think I'm full of shit. And so do I.
So they get you then. They understand.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah, they get you. Yeah. Oh, so you met, I didn't know you met at the Stanley. I didn't know that because I know it was exciting when Elizabeth went.
Oh, yeah, I met her at the Stanley. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite tarot card deck? I mean, like, I always thought that it isn't so much that you pick the deck, that the deck picks you, because my first tarot card deck was the Native American deck. And at the time, I was about 4 months pregnant with my son. And so, I just picked up the deck, I'm like, because I was into Native American stuff, because I just spent a lot of time in Tucson, Arizona. So I picked the deck, and I cut it, and it was the pregnancy card. And I just said, okay, yeah. I'm buying this.
Wow.
This is
wow.
my deck. So I was using that one for a few years, and then I got the cat tarot. So I was like, I'm a big cat lover. And then when I was with my current husband, we went to a game store, and I found the H.R. Giger tarot deck, and that is my absolute favorite deck. Every time I want to read something, I use that deck. And I always get all kinds of people saying, oh, my God, where did you get this? So do you have a favorite deck?
Well, I have a pile of decks, but the deck I use to actually read with clients, I always use the Rider-Waite, because I used to use some of my favorite decks, and like the cat deck or whatever. I don't have the cat deck, but you know, things like that. I'd use something cool like the Mother Earth Peace deck or whatever, and then people would get so sidetracked, like, what's that? You know, like they're all just by the deck, they're not doing the reading. You know what I mean? Like it was too distracting for them. So I just stick with what they call the Easy Rider Trainer deck, right?
Yes,
and that's what I use.
Yes, the basic deck that everybody knows about. Yeah. I know there's a Lovecraft deck. I'd love to get my hands on that, but it costs about $1,000 or something like that.
Cool.
That's a nice one.
I've seen many decks because, you know, when I'm reading for someone half the time, they're readers too, and then they'll pull out their crazy decks and I'll be, holy shit, that's cool. You know?
So you read for other readers. So when you're reading for other readers, you know, so do they acknowledge that you saw something that they didn't? Or is it when you're doing it, that's not what they're thinking of? Is that what would happen?
I don't know. I
read
for thousands of people because I read like a
fan. But you read for readers, though. You read for other readers. So I'm wondering how that works.
I don't know I'm reading. I don't know I'm reading until I'm done. And then they'll say, oh, yeah, I'm a tarot reader, too. And then they might grab my hand and tell me something on my palm. Or,
oh, they don't
know.
Wow.
Yeah, like sometimes we'll do a trade. And, yeah, it's cool. Often when I find out someone's a reader, then I'll ask them, well, what do you think I just said? You know, like you just said. I will ask them, did I hit it? Am I stupid?
What if you don't like what they said then? Okay, take it back or whatever. You know, some people don't believe in these things, but don't you think most people, you know, are curious even though they say they, you know, especially the ones that said, oh, I don't believe in that. You know, they probably are just scared to let themselves believe in anything.
Oh yeah. I never force people to get a reading because I know
that wouldn't be good.
And so I would never do that. Like way back when I was first starting at that coffee shop, some guy came in and I was really new and I wasn't, you know, I was still like a little wimp then because I still was just out of my first marriage. I hadn't grown my balls yet after my second marriage. So, I still was kind of a little passive. And so this dude comes in. He's like, I don't believe you can do it. You know, and he's paying me $30 for this reading. But all he's doing is sitting there telling me I can't do it. And it's all a fake and this and that. And part of me is just like, then why did you just pay for me? Like, you just paid to sit here and harass me? Or,
why do you want
dude?
This?
Anyway. So I just did my best to read for him, and it's the only time I've ever been – no, I've done it once since in 30 years or 20 years or however long I've been doing this. I was able to actually pick a name, and I've never been able to do that, but I was so angry that I somehow – because he was taunting me. He's like, oh, it's – and then I started freaking him out because I was just reading the cards as I'd been taught. But I was hitting on shit, and he's growing pale. He's starting to shut up. And then I just spat out this name – I don't know what the name. I don't even remember the reading. I just remember, like, you know, the vibration of he was an asshole, and that I freaked him out. And I spew out this name, and he just like went crazy. Like he was just so, like he just ran away with his tail between his legs. Like he was just, So that was fun. That was really good at. Yeah, I'll show you, asshole. You know, come here and torment the tarot reader. Well, I'll torment you back. And I, you know. So that was cool, and I wish I could do that all the time, like be that clear and accurate and get names and dates and stuff, but usually I can't do names. But that was cool. That was fun. Yeah, I get people all the time, you know, especially when I'm at Fan Expo, they'll come by, oh, yeah, you know, they're the same, you know, just like when you're sitting there with your books at a convention. It's the same thing. It's, you know, you can't do that, or I can write a book better than you, or what the hell's that? You know, like it's the same shit.
Well,
like you do with anything.
Well, you're like your readings and stuff, how do they play any part in your fiction and your horror writing? I mean, do you kind of combine both in any way? Just the topic
yes.
of it?
I have, I have a series right now. It went from Ravenous Romance. Now it's at Riverdale Avenue Press. And now it's called the Witch Upon a Star series. And it's all based on tarot and astrology. And when I write the books, I pull the reader doesn't know, but I myself, as a writing tool, pull a card for each chapter. And I usually do a character reading on the characters. And, you know, so I use it as a tool to write, and I also write about it.
That's interesting. That's very interesting because you get the inside in-depth of your characters, which is, you know, every writer would like to feel that they do, but sometimes if you don't feel a connection, it's not a good way to write because you can't connect to what they're saying, you know. And if you
I like the idea of doing a tarot card reading on your own characters because that will help you to get to know them better. That's a really good idea.
I think so too.
When I went to StokerCon in Vegas this last year, I did a little. Workshop on it, not a workshop, I guess it was a presentation because we didn't workshop. And I just did like a short, it was only an hour of how to do pretty much what I just said. And I also had crystals and pendulums and you know, it's how to use these tools in your writing. But I'm hoping this year at the Queen Mary, with StokerCon's at the Queen Mary this year, that I'm going to, I have to give my final presentation. It has to be approved, but I think it will be, where I'm going to give like a 2-hour workshop and we're actually going to physically sit down and write using tarot cards and crystals and stuff.
Yeah, I think that I think people don't realize how close authors get to their characters, good and bad ways, you know, and I think that, you know, when I first started, I still do it a lot of times. If you can't really connect, what I used to do is write a letter as that person, because sometimes through a letter, I think you get to know a person better, because sometimes people write things in a letter that they may not write or may not talk about, but in a letter they can write it sometimes. It's easier for some people
to
do that. Yeah, so, I mean, I used to do that a lot. You know, but anything to get into the characters, I mean, you have quite a few books out there, and you have very long books. Why are your books so, I mean, you have like 500-page books, right?
Well, I don't think I've ever had a 500-page book. But
it's 400, but are those the series with other people?
I have real-size, well, when I wrote for leisure, they're just paperback novels, your average 400-page
But the ones
book.
That the ones that are series, those are like 500, is that what you're saying? Those are...
No, the Witch Upon a Star books are about 55,000 words. I try to keep them around 55,000 words. That's like a little smaller than my leisure books, but it's not a novella, unless you're at Samhain and they say it's a novella. But I'm not with them anymore, so did I say that out loud on the radio?
No, and I think Elizabeth, you said the last time about things like, you said you called it a mini, right? Didn't you call it a mini novella, some things?
A novelette.
A novelette.
It's a little smaller than a novella.
Yeah.
But I'm also working right now on a space opera because, you know, I'm a Star Wars freak, so I'm writing my own thing. And with that, what I've been doing it on Patreon. So people who are on my Patreon get to see me work on it. And with that, I am very much into, and what I do with my Witch Upon a Star series, just as writing tools, I have index cards, cue cards. So each cue card, you know, I write, like, especially the Witch Upon a Star series, because that's like 13 books, right? So you got to keep everyone in order and straight. So each person has a cue card or two or three, and it lists, you know, who they are, what they wear in a scene. And so with my space opera, I have to build entire galaxy. I'm building planets. I'm building weapons. I'm building spaceships. I'm trying to do a brand new world that's never been done because I can't steal from all my favorites. Like
so do you draw that when you look at it while you're writing, or do you draw it yourself, or, you know?
I can't draw worth a shit, so I just write.
Right,
words.
But you could, I mean, and you so, know, right, right. But you make it, you put the things where, you know, do you put it down on paper, or is it just in your mind?
Yeah, on my cue cards. So I have
on your cue
cards.
So
on my Patreons.
You mean the index cards or something? I use a lot of index cards. So is that what you mean? Like little cards?
Cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
on Patreon,
go ahead.
Whenever I make a new a character, or I think of, okay, their boots have this in it, and then I'll write a cue card about their boots or a cue card about a building, or, you know, and then my patrons on Patreon can see, I'll photograph them and put them up so they can see how I'm world building, so they can see. That's why they're there, to watch me write.
So is that how you relate with you relate with your readers then, I assume, that way?
I'm trying to, yeah. I'm still kind of new to this Patreon thing, and I'm 8 chapters in because I started off doing...
Well, what do you mean Patreon? I don't know what that...
What is
Patreon? I don't think I've ever heard that.
Yeah.
What is Patreon?
I've never heard of it either.
It's patreon.com. So the idea of Patreon is that, remember, that's... in the day, like kings and queens and stuff, they were patron of the arts. So the idea is, you know, you'd live in the castle and the king would, you know, pay for you to make your sculptures or whatever the hell. So it's kind of like that, where people will give you money to create your art. And so there's different ways people do the platforms. It's really easy for people who draw, so they just give them a drawing every day or a comic or whatever, but I can't do that. I'm trying to write a book. And so looking at how other authors are working with this. And so,
and could you spell that again? Could you spell that? It's P A T R O
E O N, Patreon.
Oh, okay.
So it's a patron. You'd be a patron, but the name of the actual thing is Patreon. That's just what they called it.
Okay.
So you can go on there. They're Googling it right now. Yeah, and then you'll see people like Gemma Files and Kate Kernan and Amanda Palmer. People like that are on there. That's how Amanda Palmer makes all her videos and shit. And again, she does music. She can, like, whip off some little music things to people. They all get excited. So for me, I try to do little videos, and I don't know what people want. So I just – so the first 8 months, I did one chapter a month of my space opera and showed them my notes and stuff. And now I'm eight chapters in, which is about 100 pages, and I was writing it in order, and I don't write in order in real life, so I'm getting really frustrated. I can't go back and tweak. So then I told, you know, the person who's there, because I only have one right now on my thing, I told her that, you know what, I'm going to start revising what I've done so far. I'm not doing the chapter a month anymore, and she hasn't complained, so that's okay.
So when you say you write
people...
in order, I think I know what you're meaning by that, because I think, so you're writing, you don't write in order, you write different chapters and then have to put them together that way?
I write whatever I feel like writing when I write it. That's how I write normally. But Patreon was making me disciplined in a way I hadn't been before, and that was part of the challenge to myself. Like, can I write a book in order? Can I even do that? Now, I will say with the Ravenous Romance books, which are now the Witch Upon a Star books, the first few I did, I had to write them in 3 weeks because they were coming out once a month for the first couple months. And then in my own life. Mm. So those ones I had to write in order. I actually had real chapter outlines, and I knew where everyone was going and what was happening, because I had to write them so fast that there was no time for, you know, imagination station and dilly-dallying and creativity and all that. It's like, no, this is a story. Stay on track. Focus.
You know, it's interesting. You know, it's interesting why you say that. But, you know, let me ask you a question then. I think, Elizabeth, you'll get what I'm saying. Okay, what has happened to me? And I'm sure a lot of other authors out there, you know, are thinking, like, we watch a lot of the new series that are out, you know, like, any show that
American
you pick, there's like anything. They're just like, let's say, like The Affair, any of those ones, you know, Homeland, any of those, you know, they're continuing stories. Okay. So in our minds, whether we know it or not, when we used to write, you write, and you want to put everything in so everybody understands it. But now when you watch all this, I just discovered this actually today, because when you watch all this, they always leave you not knowing things, and sometimes you don't find out a lot of things until the end. Now, somebody's editing something that I just wrote, you know, and they said it might have been in the wrong spot, okay, because nobody knew it was there. But the new way I see in TV, because, you know, I was a screenwriter, so I see it where you see something, you're writing, and then you want to hold suspense, and something inside you doesn't make you explain it because you're going to talk about it later and you don't want to repeat it. You know, do you feel that that has anything to do with, because of all the series, you know, it started with House of Cards, you know, where the binging. You know, when you go like, okay, what's happening next? And you wouldn't know what's happening until you watch the next one. But now when people are reading a book, will they find the author is more or less confusing to them if the author tries to do something like that.
I'm actually not sure what you're trying to say, but
because
all I can
you're
say
saying
is
you don't, you're
my
saying
book.
You don't go in
I tell
order.
A story
so if you
and it goes, I have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and I always
right,
do. I'm
right,
not one of those people
right,
that
which
has
is
no
the
end.
Way. But what you're saying, you're not going in order. So what
well,
does that mean to you?
My writing process. The book is in order when it's done. I don't still have her
right. Right. Okay. When it's right.
I,
right.
I,
but
I
so
think I know,
but you
I think
edit.
I know what she's talking about.
But you edit,
I
though,
what
yourself.
I about, yeah.
Is when an editor reads it. Now, I think some of the editors may be more confused than they used to be about what the writer is saying because you're trying to hold back and maybe wait till the end, and they're thinking maybe you should have said it sooner. It's Elizabeth, do you know what I'm saying when I'm saying that?
Well, you know what? Basic storytelling is the same. Basic storytelling is storytelling. Doesn't matter. I'm also a developmental editor, a copy editor. I've edited over
right. See, because you, that's what I read there about you. You
editor.
Also edit. So I'm wondering,
yeah.
You're editing, but people that don't edit their own things, are they confusing the editors because they're trying to hold back something that they know because they want to go, they want an aha moment more
yeah,
than
you,
once.
You mean they're going for a surprise? You mean they're going for surprise endings? Because
yes.
A lot of the time, the people that do that, first off, you can guess. And
yeah.
It ends up being anticlimactic when you get to the end of a lot of stories that are like that. And
yeah.
It's a hard thing to pull off. I mean, O. Henry could do it. He was
right.
really good
yeah.
at doing that. But a lot of writers really can't pull that off.
Right. Because, right. And in a screenplay, you probably
right?
could pull it off more in a screenplay.
Yeah.
But, you know, because it is... I think confusing to authors because you're trying to tell a story, which is beginning, middle, and end. But then, you know, when you, a publisher or whatever, they go, oh, this is not jumping off the page, but sometimes it doesn't jump off the page right away. And I think authors now are trying to make it jump off the page immediately. And then what happens to the author? They get confused because they can't make every, you know, every chapter can't end so exciting for some.
Yeah, well, like
I
said, I've edited
yeah.
over 1,000 books, and I haven't really found that in actual,
yeah. Okay.
Like,
well, maybe it's because I was the agent. Maybe I'm just saying because I'm just asking questions that people, because
yeah,
I think that's
agent,
happening.
You probably saw a lot of unfinished, half-assed ideas from people
yeah.
who weren't really, you know what I mean?
Well, you know, right, you know, and I hear a lot of people because what they're doing is, you know, and then... They're listening a lot to their reviews, which does confuse a lot of people because some people really take the reviews to heart and they can't continue writing because they're writing for these reviewers now to, you know, that's
what I always had in my head as a writer ever since I was at Leisure was I already had my reviews. The editor bought it. The publisher bought it. The marketing team bought it. They put a lot
uh-huh.
of money into this fucking book, and those are the only reviews I care about. Once it's out
okay.
in the world,
see, that's
it's
an
interesting. All
right, so all right. See, that's basically you summed it up, you know, because that's basically what I, in a nutshell, what I meant. Because when they're the reviewers, you know, because you had the reviewers who you felt were important reviewing it, and not that other people aren't important
yeah, people
reviewing
are gonna
it,
pay
but
me.
It can get confusing. Yeah, it can get confusing.
If they
to want people.
To give me money, then it's worth it, right?
Yeah.
People
yeah.
aren't going to pay for something that's not going to sell. So the fact that I got, you know, $5,000 to write a book means that I passed the review.
Okay.
They're not going to publish it if it's shit.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So,
right.
So once it comes out and I get all these one-star reviews, which I do, you've all seen them. That's just people's opinions. But the people
okay.
who had their faith in me to publish it, and they paid me, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 to write these books, then, you know, that's all the review.
They
I
like
I
your
got
story, right? Right.
Yeah.
And this, so
it's
basically, that's what I'm saying is because you know you can't have it both ways sometimes because you want to write the best you can, but if you look at every review and then if somebody gives you a bad review, you are so upset you can't write again. You know, because basically a lot of people that listen
oh, yeah.
to this shows or any of these shows, you know, they're upcoming writers or writers that really want to know how to write, and it's really hard these days when you look at someone's book. And you go, how did they get 300 reviews? Why don't I have 300 reviews? And I don't.
Oh yeah, I'd love to have 300 reviews after.
Yeah, I would too, and I don't. I still don't know. I mean, I've done shows. I've done shows for 6 years. I've done this career for 20 years, and I can't imagine 300 reviews. And I don't know how they get them. And they seem. I don't know. I mean, I know some of them are just.
Well,
you know,
I know
each
how
one
some
is.
Some people get them, which is the publishers will send them out to NetGalley, and they're the big publishers. There's still a lot of big publishers out there, and they will, you know, because one of my things I've been doing for about the last 2 years, cause I was in a bit of a block because of, you know, personal life bullshit, and so I've been reading other people's reviews, and so that's why I can confidently say what I think about it, because I can see how reviews have changed over the years too, like the Amazon review and the Goodreads reviews. It's just anyone's coming on, and you see all the people that hate the author and they leave shitty reviews. You see people who, you know, shouldn't have read horror to begin with leaving shitty reviews.
Right, exactly.
You
right.
Know,
right.
And so you can't take those to heart. But I will say, with my own reviews, I read everyone. And, you know, and I read the shitty ones the most because there's always truth in them. And I don't want to piss people off. Like, there was one person years ago, like House of Pain came out in 2001 or something.
Yeah.
And somebody wrote a review where they said, I didn't use any contractions. Everyone spoke formally. And that's been in my head ever since, as an editor and as a writer. I always
I get that. Yeah, I get that. I know what you're saying. I understand. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So stuff like that, you can.
But let me. But when you're talking for a character, see, this is a thing, right? I get this. Not me particularly, but what I'm saying is, because when you're writing for a character, some characters do talk like that, you know, and I have known.
Oh, yeah, but not every single character in an entire 400-page book.
No.
And, you know,
no,
and that was
no.
me, my first novel.
That was you, yeah, right. Okay, that was
and
you,
my editor
right,
should have
yeah.
caught that shit. I mean, you figure at leisure there were like 5 editors. Someone should have caught that, hey, nobody's using contractions, and this guy's a fucking guy who lives under the bridge. Like, why isn't he using contractions?
No, see, I kind of, you know, because I do understand one thing, because there's so many people, you know, from different areas, you know, certainly I've learned this from the show, you know, after doing shows for like 7 years and having shows every week and talking to different people, people talk differently. Okay, and I do think that sometimes that does change some of the wording that people make. You know, I mean, that's just how it is. You know, people that live in California may talk another way than we do in Chicago, where I am, you know what I mean, and you're from Canada. So, you know, and
yeah,
Elizabeth,
they probably
you know
it's Canadian writing.
Well, again, years ago, being an agent, they would always, a lot of the Canadian publishers would not look at any American authors. They just said, if you don't live in Canada, we don't want you to send us anything.
Oh, yeah, I've never published in Canada. I don't think I've had anything published in Canada ever.
Oh, and you live there, so that's interesting.
States.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's weird.
And, oh, what's interesting, too, if you want to, I don't know how much time we have left, but what's interesting to me how the landscape of publishing has changed, because I work for Don Doria at Leisure, you know, House of Pain and all those books. And House of Pain was originally based on the Paul Bernardo Carla Homolka serial killing case, right? Not serial killers, but the torturing. Well, they were serial killers. They were assholes. And that was like a very high-profile case that happened here in Canada, and I wrote about it pretty much as it happened. And what they did was they bulldozed the house where all the girls were tortured and videotaped and all that shit. So my book opened with the bulldozing of the house, but it's a totally different story, but I sort of used them as ghosts or whatever. Anyways, but I had the story take place, like, you know, in Ontario, because it happened around Niagara Falls, the real story, and it was originally taking place there. But then Don said we can't have stories set in Canada because Americans won't read them or whatever. So I set the story in Upper State New York. However, interestingly enough, you know, 10 years later or more, when I'm working with Don Doria at Samhain, and I wrote Captured Souls and A Penny Saved, both take place in Toronto. And I said, okay, so Captured Souls, I said, well, this is a University of Toronto professor. You know, she has all these people she keeps in her basement, but she's an award-winning teacher, blah, blah, blah. I said, but do I need to make it an American university? And he said, nope, you can be in Toronto. And so, you know,
it's
a totally different conversation of how things have changed so much.
Yeah, because, when a lot of movies are made in Toronto, a lot. Of movies, amazing.
Oh, they
Toronto.
Always happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
My
right. Exactly.
To work on them all.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's funny. It is different.
I was
people
in a
that have been
all, movie last
apparently,
week.
Apparently all three of us have done this for a while. So we see the changes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the changes, you know, probably we'll have to leave for another time, right? Elizabeth, you know, did you want to?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think we should, you know, because there's so many things that we can talk about, you know, especially, you know, at this time now, because things are changing. Probably from now till, if we talk about this in a month, there'll be more changes by Amazon or by Facebook. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot going on now. You know, and so I think it's going to be
such a tricky thing now. It's really amazing, and my career has changed so much, and I'm still trying to figure out how to actually make money at it now. Like I was saying before, I used to actually get like $5,000 to $10,000 a book. Now it's like you have to write a book for free and hope you get 50 cents in 3 months. You know, like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
What's happening?
Well, I think that, in uncertain terms, it has changed that way. And, you know, and I think for the people that are writing, I think you probably just have to write the best story, and hopefully it may revert back where people actually are caring about if people write a good story. I think that might be one of the things that may happen. Because they've let a lot go, you know, and on Amazon. They've let a lot of things go on Amazon, and I think they're, you know, maybe checking out things now, you know, differently than they did maybe 10 years ago. Because it's pretty tough. I mean, they're you know, I think things are changing. And I hope they change, like, you know, where people can make money again. Because I think
people
are not making
good money. So I know someone in Toronto, a young man, and he's been writing space opera for less than a year, and he's just raking it in. I think he's
Depends on the genre, right. It depends on the genre right now.
That's
you know?
Why I'm writing a space opera, man. I'm just following that guy and watching what he's saying. And fuck, look at, I got my tickets for Rogue One next week, do you? You know, space opera is where it's at for the next couple of years, because Star Wars is happy again, so. Until they fuck it up, then it won't be.
Mm-hmm. This is interesting. I got a lot of notes here.
Yeah.
Oh, and I will say, too, I have forayed a bit into self-publishing, and I did a couple of very small books under a pen name about a nonfiction topic. And the first year I was doing those, I was making about $400 a month, and you figure those books cost like $2. So that was pretty good. And that now I'm down to about $30 a month. They've been out a while.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so there's a few bucks to be made. But, you know, it's hard. But nonfiction is definitely selling better than fiction.
Yeah, I think that's
mm-hmm.
true.
Oh,
yeah,
it always has.
I think it always has.
Yeah, I used to write a lot of nonfiction, and I made much more money selling nonfiction than I ever did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you just have to, you know that's what I really do say. You just have to write a good story and really like what, you know, it's nice when you like what you do and have fun, you know, which is what people need more of, fun. You know, I think that's lacking
mm-hmm.
these days. And I think that hopefully it'll change after the first of the year, because I intend to have fun shows too, because, you know, you can't take it too seriously, because otherwise if you don't have any fun at it, you really, you know, it's nice to enjoy what you do. And a lot of people, they don't make money at this, but they love it. So they should continue on, because no one ever knows which book is going to be the big success. You can't know that. You know,
but it is frustrating that, you know, we spend so much time writing these books.
Yes.
And then people
they
don't even know. Even, you know, even being with a publisher like Sam Hain or Riverdale or whatever, part of it is I think there still is a bit of thing about, I think people still have issues with women writing horror, just like they have issues with women being president. And I think there are still issues, you know, that you can't combine horror and sex. People seem to not like that. I see all the time on my stuff. I have talked about that,
and Elizabeth, we've talked about these on our shows, you know. And,
yes,
and
we
the
have.
Trouble, you know, when I started writing screenplays, I wrote as a man, in a man's name, because I felt like I could be accepted more, because there were not as many women, and there still aren't as many women screenwriters,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
I've written House of Pain was a screenplay before it was a book, and I don't know how to sell it. That's like 30 years I've been trying to sell that. I don't even know where
to go. I did something that actually is really not what, you know, there's kind of rules and regulations, but I've just broke them, because I really, this is how I'm going to do things now. because I figured, well, what the hell. But I took my
Leo,
screenplay.
Right?
I took my screenplay. It was years ago I had made It's Never Too Late in a book version, okay, but it was a large it was a larger book. It wasn't like a small pocket edition. Okay, so that was years ago. And we put it in and the publisher did it. But now I figured I'd put it on made it in a PDF, well, actually Word they wanted, and I put it on Kindle and got a cover for it, and it's out there now. Because I figure, you know, if somebody sees it, they might like it, rather than never seeing it. Because, you know, I mean, I've had my screenplays read a lot. I've had some that were optioned, but you cannot, you know, and I don't feel like paying 50, 60, 100 bucks every 5 minutes to do another contest, you know, to have nothing happen for people, you know, I don't love contests.
I can't afford
Yeah,
it.
I don't love them. You know, I really don't either. So I figured, so maybe what, just put a cover, you know, find a cover you like and then put it out as a screenplay and, you know, you never know because it's better than sitting in a drawer, I think. And it looked, it turned out it was fine. You know, and Kindle accepted
it.
It went in the Kindle. You know, you can take it and put it in the Kindle, and it does work. I didn't think it would, but it did. And I put it in with a PDF. That didn't work, so you had to do it in Word. And it came out not bad, and it really, it's pretty good. So people can, it's not the same as a book, but it's a screenplay, and it came out looking like they could read it. Do you know what I mean? It was readable. Years ago did not work right, but it does now. So, you know, you never know. So you, and it doesn't cost that much because you put it out there and you make a cover and it's out there then, you know. But at least it's out there. And people have looked at screenplays and you never know what's going to happen. I mean, that's my opinion. So you have nothing to lose. So why don't you take it and put it out there, you know, because it's someone may not want it to do
it. Out of a screenplay that's already published, are they?
What do you mean? Why?
Are they going to make a movie?
How do you know? Right, it's not a movie. It's a screenplay, but why not? I mean, it's better than nothing. I mean, why would you?
People can see how it ends. I don't know. I find, you know,
if you're doing a book, but if they're taking so much from a book, they're taking so many stories from books. You know, even myself, when I'm writing from a screenplay, when I write it into a book, it changes. So they could change some of it, you know. I mean, which they do. I'm writing a book version of It's Never Too Late, and I've already added something I never had. So it makes it more fun for me to do then. So it's not just, you know. And I did the same with my Grand Central Station. It was a screenplay, and then I made it into a book, and it was kind of fun because it's not the same thing. And it's interesting for the writer to see that because you see the difference. You might like it. It's a lot of fun. To try to do it.
Well,
it's
like
not
I
easy.
Said, House of Pain started off as a screenplay that
right.
Someone
so then you know that right.
They wanted me to write it because they were making a movie and it had to be small budget. But then it turned out my monster was too big at the end and it blew their budget. So then
that's
why after
right.
I pitched to Leisure, I pitched 5 books to Leisure, and then finally I said, oh, I got this screenplay. And then Don said, oh, that sounds like a good story because it was about the serial killers, right? And then so then I went through, like you said, each page I'd just type it into a story. Which is probably why I forgot to use contractions because I was too busy writing from the screenplay.
Yeah. Well, screenplay,
yeah,
it is a different thing. It is different, but it's fun to see the difference on your own.
It's a different format. Yeah.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Elizabeth, I'll send you mine so you can see what it looks like.
Yeah.
Because it really, you know, okay. But it did turn out a lot. It turned out fine that someone can read it, you know. And so if they just enjoy it as a screenplay, because you can get the gist of a screenplay just, you know, once you learn how to read them, it's easy. You know, I mean, it's a lot of fun sometimes. Maybe it's because I was an agent and you can get the whole story from the screenplay. You know, I mean.
I took screenwriting for 3 years in university. But, I know how to screenwrite.
But that's what I'm saying. It's fun.
When I graduated, I was trying to get into the film business, but it was so crazy. My husband was in it. I decided to raise kids and write books, man, because it was too crazy for me. And now, I said, I've been doing background work. I was on the James Franco movie last week. I'm having fun doing my writing. And, yeah. But then,
I love movies.
I keep running into women on set like the makeup lady or the producer, they'll come over and talk to me. Oh, hey, how's it going? And then they'll come up. I'm a writer, and they'll say, oh, do you do screenplays? And I'll be, yeah, I'm trying to, you know, break in. They said, well, you can't break in. It's an old boys' town. Good luck with that. So, you know, it's the same old shit everywhere. And we're
well,
that's why my space opera book will be under a man name.
Okay. Well, that's what I started to say at the beginning. That's the problem, man. You know, it was funny because I use another name of writing, and I had a screenplay once that was about the roles were reversed, and somebody, the review they gave was a good review, except they thought the book, even that they were pretty sure that a man wrote this book. So I was laughing when I read the review because I always want to feel like, okay, if I write like a man, well, that, you know, how, then maybe I'll get more accepted. So it was funny that they wrote on the book that they liked the book, but they're pretty sure that the woman was really a man writing it. So I guess it's kind of interesting. You know, I mean, that's what you're saying. It's kind of different that you go man and a woman writing a, you know, because some men write women's characters really well. It doesn't have
to
be a woman.
Well, why wouldn't they? I can write.
Well, right,
really
but
well.
That's right, exactly. I had
if
some male authors that
you
were
have
great.
Empathy, you can write anything.
Right. When I was an agent, I had a lot of people that wrote really great female parts. You know, but as you see in the movies, it's very difficult. There are very few female actresses that. Well, there's more that could, but that can hold the movie. It's usually, if it's with a woman, it's with another man, equal time in a romantic comedy type, or because it's difficult for a woman to, you know, except Angelina Jolie did a couple herself, and she did pretty good, but there's
well,
not,
but
you
she
know.
Got all the money, so she could, you have to get
yeah. But,
money,
you know, so
it,
you know, maybe it'll
want.
Change, so hopefully, maybe somebody listen to these shows, and they're listening, and think, all right, maybe we'll give some
it's
women,
it's not
going to
change
know, it's true.
In the next 4 years, I'll tell you that.
Well, Elizabeth, are you ready? I think because we're over an hour, so what do
yeah,
you want to do?
Yeah, I think we've gone over an hour. Well, I'd like
yeah,
to
okay.
thank you, Sephora, for coming on the
oh,
show.
Oh, it's
and
been
first,
such
fun.
Go, fun.
Oh, I know, it's been great. We need to, I need to get your, I guess, Facebook and your Twitter and, you know, just where people can contact you so they can find your books and to find more about your tarot readings and paranormal investigations and such, like your website, that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, my website is Sephora Giron, SephraGiron, all one smooshed together in one nice long word, .ca, because somebody stole my .com. So who's got it, but I don't. Then on Twitter, it's just Sephora, Sephra. On Instagram, I think I'm Sephra Giron. On Pinterest, I'm Sephra or Sephra Giron. I'm always some version of my name. On Facebook, I have Sephra Giron Author, which is my public
yeah,
profile.
Yeah, if they put it in the link, if all they have to do is, you know, put it in the search box and you come up fast. So it's easy. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Google.
You're everywhere. You're
everywhere. Yeah. I'm on Twitch. I'm trying to figure out the Twitch more so I can hook it up to my Patreon so people can watch me write live because it's so exciting to watch writers.
Well, and that could be,
oh, yeah,
you know,
come
that,
to
maybe
my Patreon.
The,
please, everybody, join my Patreon.
Maybe that's what the authors, you know, that's what some of these bookstores should have some. They should have some authors because people really like to talk to authors. People love it. They do. They love talking
to
authors.
If they could Patreon is www.patreon.com/Sephra. I'm pretty sure
okay.
I'm just Sephra on it.
I'm going to say, I know Elizabeth
like
will do it too. I'm going to go look and see what that is. I never heard of it.
There's like videos and all sorts of crap.
It's
no
new to me too.
Yeah,
no one gets to see anything. Like I have stuff on there no one knows. And all my secret projects.
All right. Well, this has been such fun. It's been a lot of fun.
It was a great time.
It's a great time. And Elizabeth, you'll be having more shows. And I'll be having more shows. And,
thank you so much for having me. This has been great.
Oh, this has really been fun. Thank you.
Glad you were on.
I'm glad I had a reason to stay home.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.